Happy Thursday and welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report here today. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Coming up on the show, Taylor Charlson will bring us a feature report, and I'll have a look at regional and national agricultural news, kicking it off with regional ag news right after this word from our sponsor.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
California-based Misionero started out as a grower-shipper of field-grown lettuces and tender greens. However, in 2021, the company expanded into the hydroponic lettuce space. They started partnering with Grupo Altex, an agricultural company in Mexico, with more than 10 years of experience in the CEA space, according to President Joe Marinda. This operation is the largest hydroponic lettuce and leafy green producer in North America and the only fully integrated process of its kind in Mexico. Products from Misionero's hydroponic lettuce line include romaine, butter lettuce, little gems, and the list does not stop there. Recently, spinach was also added to their hydroponic portfolio. To package these products, Misionero considers sustainability a priority for its business. Their lettuce is eco-friendly, packaged in rPET clamshells, and uses 80% less water than traditional field-grown products, according to Miranda. This offering appeals to both consumers' demand for environmentally friendly products as well as retailers' sustainability goals. They look forward to continued success with Grupo Altex in providing customers with this unique and top-of-the-line product. The Organic Produce Summit was held recently in Monterey, California, and had a record attendance. It continues a streak of strong attendance for in-person events for the produce industry in 2022. The summit featured buyer tours and a lively opening reception on July 13th and well-attended educational sessions prior to the trade show on July 14th. Topics included controlled environment agriculture, branded produce versus private label, and consumer spending during these inflationary times. The size of the fields intended for almonds, rice, wine grapes, and other crops left unworked could be around 800,000 acres, double the size of last year and the most in at least the last several decades, according to Josu Medellin Afua, an associate professor at the University of California, Merced. The figure is preliminary as researchers continue to look at satellite imaging and other data. An official estimate remains a few weeks away. Medellin Afua is leading an economic study on farm production and droughts with funding from the California Department of Food and Agriculture. Much of the idle land is in California's Central Valley, which accounts for about a quarter of U.S. food production. Mile after mile of farmland reveals withered crops next to fields of lush green plants, a testament to the tough decision that growers are forced to make on how much and what to produce and whether to keep farming at all. Surface water rights holders are seeing sharp cuts amid the drought, and reserves are declining because of critically low snowmelt and depleted storage from last year. What's really concerning is for the first time, they are fallowing at least 250,000 acres in the Sacramento Valley. That, according to Karen Ross, Secretary of the California Department of Food and Agriculture, she says those are the most senior water rights holders. Last year, some California farmers were stunned to find their so-called senior water rights restricted. Water laws in the state are governed by a complex system that dates back to the Gold Rush era. Senior water rights holders, which include companies, growers, and cities with claims that were acquired before 1914, and landowners whose property borders a river, are the last to see their supplies curtailed. State and federal agencies are undertaking a 30,000-acre floodplain restoration project to enhance habitat for juvenile salmon in a Yolo bypass near the Sacramento River. The project will allow water to enter the floodplain to nurture habitat for fish when river levels are higher. The project is being implemented in conjunction with the State Water Project and the Federal Central Valley Project. Both key water providers for California agriculture have slashed deliveries due to drought. Blackberry supplies in North America are currently short due to weather conditions in both Georgia and North Carolina. Robert Wilhelm of Bova Fresh LLC in Florida says that he thinks last year they had better supplies of blackberries, but not much better. This time of the year is always a little tough for blackberry supplies, he says. BovaFresh currently has fruit coming in from several regions, including Guatemala, Georgia, North Carolina, and California. He says there is not much competition right now, as all regions seem to be short. At the same time, demand is flat for blackberries, though not as a whole category. Altogether, this means that pricing on blackberries is holding steady and mirrors the pricing that was seen this time last year. Looking ahead on blackberries, Wilhelm says he expects supplies to fall off with even more rain coming, and in turn expects Florida and Georgia growers to close up for the season due to the pricing. While some fruit crops have risen to prominence on tides of superfruit status or novelty, the table grape industry's growth has been nothing short of astounding, given it has been a well-established food on supermarket shelves for generations. Global exports have risen 17% in the last 5 years, with around 3.1 million metric tons of the fruit traded in 2017 to 2018. This growth has gone hand in hand with an ever-increasing portfolio of flavorful cultivators that in many ways have helped to decommoditize a category whose international trade now totals more than $88 billion, including re-exports. For many growing nations like leaders Chile and the United States, a shift to new varieties has allowed producers to make more with less while extending the season. Apart from sheer growth, perhaps more notable has been a rise in new supply regions, while others have fallen by the wayside. In 2007, Peru and India only exported around $60 million each, but in 2017, their combined overseas table grape sales surpassed the U.S. $900 million mark. What the table grape sector gives is a lesson in consolidation, but what will be the learnings on the horizon for this global kitchen staple? As new varieties capture consumer tastes, which ones should growers start pulling out, and what should they look for in a replacement? These are just some of the questions to be discussed at the Global Grape Summit. The Global Grape Summit will take place in Bakersfield, California on August 20th. It will be held at the DoubleTree by Hilton. For more information, log on to globalgrapesummit.com.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
The California Department of Food and Agriculture is awarding $1.85 million to the University of California Agriculture and Natural Resources to increase technical assistance for California's organic farmers. CDFA's State Organic Program is executing $850,000 in contracts with UCANR to run through September 2024, while CDFA's Office of Environmental Farming and Innovation is awarding a $1 million grant to run from July 2022 to June 2025. California farmers provide 36% of all organic production in the U.S., and the funding is supposed to expand technical assistance to growers transitioning to certified organic ag and support California's strong community of organic farmers, according to CDFA Secretary Karen Ross. California organically farms just over 2 million acres, which is about 8% of the total agricultural acreage in the state, and will likely continue to expand over time as long as consumer demand continues to rise, according to Houston Wilson, director of UCANR's Organic Agriculture Institute. Wilson explained how the funds will be available for a number of goals and efforts to further the organic ag industry in the state.
What we're going to be doing with these funds are a number of different activities to support existing and then potentially transitioning organic growers. The extension components, since those are the largest, I'll just start with that. We're receiving funds to hire two academic coordinators, and one coordinator is going to be focused on medium to large scale organic, and the other is going to be focused on small scale organic. And that latter position is through a partnership with the UC Small Farms Network. This is a network of small farms advisors that are throughout the state. And while not all small farms are organic or all organic farms are small, there is overlap in that area. And that program is sort of best positioned to help the UC Organic Agriculture Institute engage with that segment of the organic market. And they have well-established connections with many underrepresented growers and a lot of capacity for bilingual extension and things like that. So there's kind of this two parts to the academic coordinators that we're bringing on with these funds. Broadly, what we want to do is facilitate what we're calling the California Organic Agriculture Knowledge Network. I think I've spoken about this a few times with you folks and others in the agricultural media, the Cal Oak Network for short. What we're trying to do here is leverage the existing knowledge networks around organic agriculture that have developed over the past decades in the absence of really targeted public extension support for organic. And so rather than just kind of show up in the room like the 800-pound gorilla that the UC can potentially be sometimes and say, you know, this is how you do everything organic, we're really, you know, wanting to create the extension components of the Organic Ag Institute in a way that's collaborative and participatory with a lot of the existing organic stakeholders that are out there. So part of the work of these academic coordinators and myself as the director, of course, is to first and foremost really figure out how to facilitate that. What is the organizational or administrative infrastructure needed for us to create this network? And there's a few examples out there nationally and internationally that we're starting to look into as at least, you know, inspiration or even as a template for how we're going to do this. Within that, there's going to also be a new grower mentorship program. So currently, you know, we're trying to identify well-experienced organic producers who might want to mentor new growers that are entering into organic certification. So that's one of those components of what we could do within that network. The funds that we receive specifically support that mentorship program, support this general creation of the Oak Network. And additionally, we'll support the development of multiple field days across the state. So these are going to be targeted training opportunities to organic growers. We're looking at developing at least 8 events per year, and these are going to be focused on organic production, processing, marketing, sort of all facets. The content specifically for those events in part is going to be informed by this statewide needs assessment that we're conducting in parallel. This is an effort that was funded by the Organic Research and Extension Initiative, a federal program through the USDA. And we've recently hired a postdoctoral scholar to come to California and start initiating that work this fall. So we have, you know, in our project description that we're going to do X amount of field days, and the content of which is sort of to be determined as we do this needs assessment and identify what it is that folks most want to learn about. And then once we get an understanding of that, we'll put together these events. So there's going to be more targeted extension support in the form of field days and training events for organic growers. We're also going to pair that with the development of video and print and online material that covers similar topics. So, and this doesn't mean just filming the field days and putting those on a website. It's actually, you know, well-produced educational videos on topics like how to become a certified organic grower, how to market certified organic produce, you know, what are some of the key production practices for organic tree nuts or something like that. You know, again, trying to inform this through the needs assessment effort that's happening in parallel. So we're looking at producing up to 4 videos per year. We also want to establish a demonstration orchard and vineyard, which will most likely be at the Kearney Ag Center. We're still determining what specific crop each of those should be. Vineyard, obviously grapes, probably raisin grapes. The orchard, we're looking at almonds or pistachios or something like that right now. So there is already certified acreage at the Kearney Ag Center. So this would be a platform for not only demonstration of practices, but also research on organic production of these crops.
Wilson said there will also be a number of research opportunities available with these new funds, including new information on acreage, where to optimally plant, and also economic analyses.
When you look at organic production in particular, almost half of the organic almond crop is grown in Fresno County alone, which is disproportionate to Fresno's share of the overall almond acreage. So, you know, trying to understand what those trends are and then look further into them, you know, in terms of why you know, are there certain areas that are better suited for organic production or not? And is that why we see these crops kind of concentrating in certain areas, if that's the case? There's also additional data from the USDA and potentially organic certifiers that we may be able to leverage to further refine this type of analysis. We're also going to conduct economic analyses through the UC Davis Agricultural Issues Center. Right now, we're funded to focus on four commodities. Again, we need to define which commodities we're going to be focusing on. And this isn't just a production cost analysis, but actually looking at markets. And really the intention here is to identify areas where there may be the most potential for growth in organic in California, given the basket of commodities that we're able to produce here in the state.
Wilson agreed that this new funding is a huge step in the right direction for the organic ag industry in California, and he likes where the industry is heading based on current demands.
I think, you know, this recent increase, it's sort of the confluence of a variety of factors, you know, consumer demands for reduced environmental impacts of agriculture. Organic agriculture can do that. You know, increased regulatory demands to reduce pesticide use and other, you know, synthetic inputs in agriculture or toxic, you know, reduce the, again, just reducing the environmental impact of agriculture. There's both consumer and regulatory demands. And I think organic in many ways can meet those demands. And so as we've seen that demand building over the years, there's, you know, it's becoming more evident that organic agriculture can be one of, can potentially be one of many solutions to address those issues.
While the funds will provide vast improvements on current industry activities and policy, what happens when the funds run out? They'll only be available for 2 to 3 years. Wilson has his own visions on how the industry can continue to improve.
What I've really been pushing for as director of the Organic Ag Institute is to really expand the permanent infrastructure, whether it's you know, staff or research funding or extension support for organic in the state. And, you know, I think over the next couple of years, as we put all of these things into motion, I think we're going to have a real opportunity to turn around and show that to, you know, potential funders, whether it's at the state or federal level or even philanthropic support for the, you know, endowment that supports the Organic Agriculture Institute, and kind of say, look, you know, here's what this could be. You know, here's all these things in motion. Here's the extension part. Here's the research part. And let's try to make this permanent, you know? And so trying to find ways, you know, whether it's something as simple as supporting the two academic coordinators, it's not a major ask financially to do that necessarily. And so, you know, even if it's just kind of incremental steps that we can start making towards getting more and more support built up for organic in the state. So this influx in a way is really catalyzing for the first time a lot of the activity of the Organic Agriculture Institute. And we're so excited by that, not just because of the immediate resources that it provides to organic growers in the state, but also because of the opportunity that it gives us to demonstrate the potential of what this institute could do over the long term.
Expect to hear more on this from UC's Organic Agriculture Institute in the near future. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
What are the likely effects of a very strong U.S. dollar on U.S. agricultural exports? USA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford has the story.
U.S. dollar at 20-year high pulls grain prices lower. That's one of several similar market news headlines we've seen this week. We caught USDA's chief economist Seth Meyer in a cab heading to the airport, and we asked him about the situation, and he says a stronger dollar against the currencies of other countries, not very good news for U.S. farmers and grain marketers who depend on exporting their products.
The strength in the dollar makes those commodities look more expensive to all of our customers. So you see a strong dollar being transmitted into higher domestic prices for everybody we want to trade with. So it tends to tamper down foreign demand because of those seeming high prices in their own currency.
And indeed, this week, for that reason and some others, USDA projecting that in this next marketing year, export volumes will be down from this current year. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The Zimbabwe Avocado Growers Association has advised our growers to slow down their harvesting in expectation of nearly 1,000 containers, mostly from Peru, underway to Europe, so avocado supply will be extremely high, and this will undoubtedly put pressure on pricing going forward. South Africa has been exporting avocados for a while, where usually South African avocados obtain good prices on arrivals from week 19 to 21. This year, the European avocado market was under pressure from the get-go. The war in Ukraine complicated the transition from Northern Hemisphere avocados to Southern Hemisphere product. South Africa needs to be in Europe as early as possible before the huge volumes from Peru arrive. Israeli avocados were still on the market when South African avocados came, and it's expected that the late part of the window will be affected by the volumes from Peru that keep coming. The USDA's monthly World Agriculture Supply and Demand Estimates report released recently revised the 2022 to 2023 U.S. milk production estimates lower due to slower growth in milk per cow. Despite the outlook for production lowered in 2022, projected farm-level milk prices were steady to slightly lower for 2022, but raised for 2023 when compared to last month's price projections. Compared to last month, the USDA cut the 2022 milk production forecast by 400 million pounds to 226 billion pounds. If realized, 2022 production would be down 300 million pounds from 2021. The 2022 butter price forecast was raised from last month on firm demand, but the cheese price was forecast lower on continued large stocks. The price forecast for non-fat dry milk and whey prices are unchanged. And compared to a month ago, the projected 2022 annual average Class 3 milk price was reduced 10 cents to $22.80 per hundredweight. The projected Class 4 price was raised 5 cents to $24.70 per hundredweight. The 2022 all milk price forecast was cut 5 cents from last month to $26.15 per hundredweight. For 2023, the USDA projected milk production is at 228.3 billion pounds, 1 billion pounds less than last month's forecast, and if realized, 2023 production would be up about 1% from the 2022 estimate. The 2023 price forecast for cheese, butter, and NDM were raised on expected lower production, but the price forecast for whey was lowered on expected weaker international prices. Annual average price projections for 2023 were Class 3 at $20.85 per hundredweight, Class 4 at $22.30 per hundredweight, and all milk at $24.15 per hundredweight. Joby Young officially joins the American Farm Bureau Federation as its executive vice president. Young will serve as AFBF President Zippy Duvall's top advisor, lead AFBF operations across departments, and work closely with state farm bureaus to achieve federation goals. Young is replacing Dale Moore, who has served in leadership roles at AFBF for a decade, first as vice president of public policy and since 2018 as executive vice president. Moore is retiring after more than 40 years of working on behalf of America's farmers and ranchers. Moore's retirement was announced March 9th. Young's selection was announced June 24th. As discussions between rail carriers and unions have been ongoing, U.S. President Joe Biden has signed an executive order to create a presidential emergency board. The move was an essential step in keeping the collective bargaining process on track, as well as keeping the nation's railways operating. The board is to investigate and make recommendations for settlement. The Association of American Railroads points out that the Railway Labor Act governs collective bargaining for the rail industry, which aims to help parties reach an agreement without work stoppages or disruptions to U.S. freight rail movements. As part of that act, the statute includes provisions to encourage successful negotiations and, when necessary, provide outside assistance, such as forming this board to facilitate a resolution. Even with the essential step by the White House, labor issues are not over. The presidential created board now has 30 days to make settlement recommendations, and strikes are prohibited during that time. If rail carriers or rail labor reject the board's recommendations, Congress can also intervene, but there are concerns about stoppage on U.S. railways coming this fall.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Julie Cates, a sixth grade teacher at Linwood Elementary School in Visalia, admits she didn't know much about agriculture when she and her family moved to the San Joaquin Valley several years ago. But after attending the huge World Ag Expo in Tulare, she was hooked.
We transferred to the Valley in 2007 for my husband's job, and the International Agri Center had the big ag show. And I went to that and I was blown away. I had no idea. I didn't know anything about agriculture. And then I finished my degree and started working for UC Cooperative Extension as a nutrition educator. And my boss had me go sit on the County Farm Bureau Education Committee. And it just blossomed from there. Like, I'm just crazy for agriculture. So I went to my first Ag in the Classroom conference, I think 2008, and I was just hooked. And then when I left Cooperative Extension and started teaching, I applied for a grant with Ag in the Classroom. And then I received recognition from them for the work I was doing. And I've just gone, just love it, go crazy since then.
Cates shares her passion with her students. Even though they're in one of the biggest agricultural areas in the nation, she said she's still amazed at how little many of her students know about food production.
Well, when they come into my class, they know little or nothing. But when they leave, they know a lot. Like, we're in the number one dairy producing county in the state and like second in the United States. And they don't know anything about cows and how the whole system, the dairy system works. And the fact that I have kids in my class whose dad might be a milker on a dairy, and they don't know that the milk that they receive that day, 3 weeks from now, could be in China in dehydrated form.
And Kate said it's important for students to learn about the Valley's largest industry, since they are the next generation of decision makers and social leaders.
If a country can't feed itself, it cannot be successful. And besides the fuel and fiber, the feeding of ourselves is the utmost important. And they need to understand where their food comes from. And then it's up to them to develop technology for the future, because global warming is here, drought is here, water issues are here, but we still need to eat. So it's vital that they understand the process.
Kate said one of her challenges as a teacher is making her lessons interesting. One of her most popular ideas is Try It Tuesday, where students learn about a new food and then get to try it. She also has incorporated pickle making into classroom activities because it includes both social studies and math.
And you never know what's going to hook them. So I do a thing called Try It Tuesdays, and I try a new fruit or vegetable every Tuesday. And so that's a big thrill because I don't tell them ahead of time what it is, but we do the research that day on it. Like, I use California Ag in the Classroom Ag Sheet. There's a YouTube channel called True Food TV, and then we'll watch a video on how something is grown, and then they'll try it. And then I incorporate activities like we make pickles in the classroom when we're studying ancient Egypt, because they started the pickling of fruits and vegetables. So it ties into social studies. And then, of course, math is used in that recipe. Like, if they add too much salt, I had a group tell me, oh, our pickles taste like the ocean because they didn't follow directions and they got too much salt.
Kate said another challenge is dispelling the image of farmers that many students, as well as the general public, have. They view a farmer as an old person on a tractor. But today, farmers use technology to help them produce more with less. She said she hoped a project where students figure out how to grow food on Mars will help them understand the role technology plays in farming.
For one thing, I think people in general, including sixth graders, have this idea of like an old guy on a tractor and that's farming. And that's not what farming is today. And we're looking, actually, we had some grant funding last year. We're trying to incorporate planting on the planet Mars. So they'll definitely need technology. So they're looking into how we use drones, how we use weather stations, how we use drip irrigation, line irrigation, how dairies use the biofeedback chips in the cows to get their temperature, if they're going to have a baby, etc.
Kate said she gets a lot of her curriculum ideas from the California Ag in the Classroom Foundation, as well as the National Ag in the Classroom program. She also reaches out to farmers on social media, and she said they've been more than gracious to help. Although her students can't go to visit the individual farmers, Kate said she'll have a farmer Zoom with their class, which provides the next best type of interaction.
I really pay close attention to the California Ag in the Classroom website, the National Ag in the Classroom website. And I myself am involved in Tulare County Farm Bureau, so I sit on an Ag Education Committee. But also, I'm constantly searching Twitter, and I just reach out on social media, Twitter and Instagram, to farmers, anyone who's a farmer. And they have been so gracious to Zoom with my classroom. So even though we can't go on location, I communicate constantly with farmers, all types. And they've been great about it. And then the kids are engaged, because when they see, you know, when Ginny Holterman is out in her almond orchard and she's talking to the kids about this is a bud, this is a hull, this is a whatever, it's more relevant for them.
What and how teachers can incorporate agriculture into their lesson plans varies by grade level. Kate said for the younger students, it could be something as simple as planting a bean seed in a cup.
It depends on the grade level, because I'm like a cheerleader. I'm always talking to everybody about it. But like if they're kindergarten through second, it's as simple as planting a seed in a cup, like a green bean seed, just to get them started. And those meet their science standards. You know, how does a plant grow? They could also do things like go to Discover Dairy and adopt a cow. That's super easy. They could go to the California Ag in the Classroom website. There are so many amazing teacher resources on there. And in fact, California has a new link on there with Fresno County. It has all kinds of amazing farmer videos and ideas to incorporate tasting. Because as I said, tasting is what hooks the kids.
Some county farm bureaus also have educational foundations that host more locally focused Ag in the Classroom programs. The statewide California Foundation for Agriculture in the Classroom hosts a yearly conference for teachers. This year, it'll be September 22nd through the 24th in Ventura Beach. It is designed for K-12 educators, administrators, and volunteers who want to learn and share how to incorporate food and fiber into all curricular areas. The conference also is seeking presenters who want to share their expertise. California Ag in the Classroom also offers teaching resources, lesson plans, fact sheets, events, how to start a school garden, grants, scholarships, and many other ideas. Many of the lesson plans, activity books, and other materials are free for California teachers, too. Visit the California Ag in the Classroom program at learnaboutag.org. This is Vicki Boyd reporting for My Ag Life.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.